We're continuing on. Sherry mentioned it's Covenant Sunday. We're also continuing on in our series on spiritual formation and looking at one of the primary aspects of ourselves, of our selfhood, of what makes us a self. You know, we started out with this series talking about what we think about. You know, everyone, there's a certain set of characteristics that everyone has, you know, that make up the self in the classical and biblical understanding. Number one is thoughts, what you think about. Everyone thinks. Everyone feels. Everyone has emotions and feelings. Everyone feels things, and that's part of yourself, is what you feel, your emotional life. And also, everyone chooses. Everyone makes choices, has the power to, and exercises the power to make choices. Everyone has a will. And everyone has a body, a way they interact with the outside world, right? Another huge part, just as important of any of these, and what has made you you, is your social context, right? Your relationships with other people, the way you relate to other people, the way other people relate to you and have related to you, right? You can all think about certain people who have shaped you in your past, negatively and positively, right? You are shaped in your social context in terms of how you are loved and how you are nurtured, and you're shaped in your social context in terms of how you are injured and wounded, right? And it's pointless to talk about the self without talking about your relationships and your social context. It's a huge part of your selfhood, of your personhood, your personality. And all of these things, you know, interplay, they interlock, and there's interrelations between all these things I just talked about. They're not these neat little definitive categories. And God wants to change all of them. He wants to change our entire selves until all of this. You know, you're not a full, flourishing human being, you know, remade and redeemed in the image of God unless all of these things are redeemed, right? And so today I want to be thinking about this social context and what the Bible has to say about how we relate to other people. A lot of this is very repetitive. This is the sort of thing we talk about all the time. 1 John 2. Again, this just is such familiar language. 1 John 2. John says, "Dear friends, I'm not writing a new commandment for you. Rather, it is an old one you have had from the very beginning. This commandment, to love one another, is the same message you heard before. Yet it is also new." As you've heard this, like I said, it's so familiar. It's almost tired how often we say loving people in here, right? But it's also, every time you think about it and you consider it deeply, and you consider that the God of this universe, the creator of this cosmos, the main thing He wants is us for us to love Him and to love each other. This is so... It's fresh and it's vernal each time. And it's also new because we have gotten so much a religious baggage in the way of the simplicity of this. And it's also new because we have gotten so much cultural sinfulness worked into the way that we treat each other. It's not that Christians don't love each other, it's that people don't love each other. Okay? It's also new. It's you've heard this a million times, but it's still the same fresh challenge. Jesus lived the truth of this commandment, and you are also living it. You're also engaged in this, and I know you guys. I know this is true of you. I can identify with John. You've already started down this road. You're already engaged in this process. The darkness is disappearing and the true light is already shining in so many ways in your lives of you guys in this community. You can see the light beginning to glimmer already in the darkness, right? But if anyone claims I'm living in the light but hates a fellow believer, that person is still living in darkness. Anyone who loves a fellow believer is living in the light and does not cause others to stumble. But anyone who hates a fellow believer is still living and walking in darkness. Such a person does not know the way to go, having been blinded by the darkness. So what's the standard? You know, what's the bar for following Jesus? What's the bar for Christianity? How you treat other people. I think about hate. Who hates a fellow believer? Right? Nobody in here hates, right? What does hate mean to you guys? When we talk, what is hate? What do you think about hate? Huh? For me, I've always thought about hate as something like you're actively like despising another person, right? You're like wishing for their bad, right? Like they're your enemy and you wish they would die. Or at least they would suffer, right? You know what I'm saying? With hate, this active hatred, right? And so we can look at this and we can say, oh, I'm okay. I don't hate anybody. And I can't really think of anybody that I, would wish harm to, right? Maybe, well, if I'm honest, maybe one or two people, but... But I want to think about what the word John uses here and see if we have set the bar at the same place he has. The word he uses is missio. Properly to detest on a comparative basis. To detest on a comparative basis. Hence denounce. Or to love someone or something less than someone or something else. To renounce one choice in favor of another. And it's used to love less or to esteem less. Okay? The same word, what Jesus used, and he said, if you don't missio your mother and your father and follow me, you're forget you. He's not saying actively hate your mother and father. Then you need to care about me. You need to care about God more than you care about, anyone else. So when he says, when you hate a fellow believer, not saying you actively wish for their bad, says you don't care about them. If you esteem them less than the other thing we always talk about in terms of love is yourself. If you hold the other person as less value than yourself, or one person as less value than another person, that's missio. Right? See what I'm saying? So the bar for this, if we're not actively wishing for and working for the death of another person, that doesn't mean that we still haven't quite gotten under this bar. If anyone claims I'm living in the light but hates, but missio, a fellow believer, that person is still living in darkness. Anyone who loves a fellow believer, who wishes for their good, is living in the light and does not cause others to stumble. But anyone who hates a fellow believer, anyone who devalues another believer, anyone who dismisses another believer, anyone who values another believer less than some other person, is still living and walking in darkness. If you don't see the dignity and glory of each person, they're still living and walking in darkness. Such a person does not know the way to go, having been blinded by the darkness. If we don't see the dignity and value of each believer, we have bought into a lie of the enemy. Right? We've been blinded by that darkness. Do not love this world or the things it offers you. For when you love the world, you do not have the love of the Father in you. And what it means by the world here does not merely mean physicality or this present age versus a future age. It tells you exactly what he's talking about. for the world. This context offers a craving for physical pleasure, craving for everything we see, and pride in our achievements and possessions. This is a definition of our society's cultural context, right? This is just absolutely, if you want to doubt something in the Bible, that's fine. You know, we can have all sorts of opinions and arguments and all sorts of stuff, but you have to be a moron to doubt this. Sorry. This is true. This is the world we live in. This is the ocean we swim in. Craving for physical pleasure, a craving for everything we see, and pride in our achievements and possessions. This is the world we live in. And these things pervert how we see and how we treat each other. It twists everything about how people treat each other away from the way God designed people to work, right? If you are craving some physical pleasure, whatever that may be, and that is your goal, that is consuming you, what happens to the people who are in your way, who are involved or who are impacted by the decisions that you make along that way, you know, toward that craving? What matters about those people? They don't matter. You literally missio. You literally hate those people. You see what I'm saying? You're choosing that. You are valuing them, those people who suffer because of your choices. You are valuing them less than the craving of that physical pleasure you're going after. All right? And you're literally hating some. You're literally hating the people in the way who are affected by those decisions and by those choices. See? The same thing for a craving for everything we see. You just want this new object. It doesn't matter, you know, what it takes to get it. It doesn't matter how many extra hours you have to work and how much time you have to spend away from someone else. Or it doesn't matter, you know, the opportunity cost of that item, what you could be using those resources for. Nothing else matters but obtaining that thing. Right? So what are you doing to the people along the way who are affected by all that? Missio. Right? You're comparatively putting less value on those people than you are that thing, getting that next new shiny thing, right? And pride in our achievements and possessions, and just being so proud of who you are and what you've done and what you have, and lording it over other people. Well, again, that's literally missio, is literally hating those people. You are lording yourself, lording your stuff, and being proud, right? And puffing yourself up, building yourself up at the expense of other people is literally missio, is literally hatred, right? So what's happened in our society, our culture today? It's been completely turned upside down from the way God designed people to work. God designed people to work on love, and our culture, just from the bedrock, from A to Z, the entire thing's not working on love, it's working on missio, it's working on hate. Right? You see what I'm saying? Okay. So, how does that get redeemed? If this is how we all grew up, for lack of a better word, you know, treating other people, how we grew up relating to other people, basically from a context of hate, from missio, right? Of valuing some people more than others and valuing some things more than people, right? And assigning this relative value and a carelessness for other people, how does that get redeemed? How does that get formed into the image of God? I want to read an extended quote from Dallas Willard in Renovation of the Heart today. So we come to deal with the spiritual formation of our social dimension. We have to start from woundedness. It is hard to imagine anyone in this world who has not been deeply injured in his or her relationships to others. Now, is that true or is that not true? Right? And see, that's the thing about this upside-down way of relating to people based on hatred and not love, based on missio and not agape. Right? The thing about that is that you always end up on the short end of the stick one sometime or the other. You always are eventually you are going to be one of the ones who's hated. You're going to be one of the ones who is disregarded in favor of someone or something else, right? You are going to suffer the consequences of a broken world. Alright? And has anyone never been injured by a relationship with another person? I don't see any hands. Alright? You just gotta realize that we've all suffered from this. Alright? Everyone's wounded. All right? You have to realize that. Everyone is wounded. Now we've responded to that in a plethora of ways. We may have armored up. We may have, worked and got past it in a healthy way, or we may still be just nursing, nursing this pain, or we may be nursing spite or hatred. Or, you got to realize everybody's screwed up. Okay, and that's where we start. And the exact nature of the poison of sin in our social dimension is fairly easy to describe. And this is just like a light bulb to me, okay? That's pretty wordy. I hope he gets it. Maybe it's just a weird thing with me. The exact nature of the poison of sin in our social dimension is fairly easy to describe, though extremely hard to deal with. It has two forms. They're so closely related that they really are two forms of the same thing, of lovelessness, the lack of proper regard and care for others. Lack of proper regard and care for others. That is lovelessness. It's also missio, right? It's also hatred. These things. You think about the way we hurt each other and the way you've been wounded. These two forms are assault or attack on one hand and withdrawal or distancing on another. They're so much a part of ordinary human existence that most people think they are just reality and never imagine that we could live without them. And the way we hurt each other always comes down to one of these two things: assault, acting against what is good for another. Was any sort of manipulation, belittling, humiliation, or using people to your own ends, and on and on and on and on. People hurt each other, by their actions, by their words, almost primarily by their words and by their attitudes. You attack, you assault other people in all sorts of ways. Whether you go steal, something from them, or whether you murder them. Hopefully there's nobody in here like that. But when you belittle someone and you manipulate them to your own ends, use them to your own ends, an assault or an attack. But also, the flip side of that is withdrawal or distancing, where we regard the well-being and goodness of someone else as matters of indifference. Okay? Where you just pull away from that person, and that person, you don't care whether that person lives or dies. You don't care whether that person, you just don't care. Their destiny, their immediate well-being, how they're doing in life, their relationship with God, all that stuff, it doesn't matter to you. You have pulled away completely from that person, all right? And totally indifferent, all right? You see what I'm saying? You identify with that. Anybody ever withdrawn from someone else? See, no hands. Good job. Okay. Now, why is that a problem? Why is that a problem? Is that agape or is that missio? Yeah. Okay. And who has been hurt by one of the... Who's been? Everyone in here, I'm sure, has been attacked or assaulted in some way. Humiliated or just betrayed or any number of things, right? Who said someone who you can tell is just completely indifferent to you as a human being, right? Does that feel good? No. Does that heal or does that wound? Huh? Yeah. And you can kind of see, like he said, this is just normalcy in our world at large, right? By and large, you know, you have a, this is how people treat each other, right? Right? Now, we'll come back to this. Well, think about ways that this has changed. That this is, how do you get out of this cycle? You know, you assault and you attack someone, so that person withdraws from you and don't, you know, care if you live or die or what in the world happens to you. Right? How do you get out of this? How do you break this cycle? Because we've all been wounded, right? We're all starting from a place of woundedness. We've all been affected by this. So step one is to see yourself as God sees you. Know who you are and where you stand with God. And who are you in God? You're His child. You're His. You're holy and blameless as you stand before Him without a single fault. You have nothing to earn. You have nothing that He hasn't paid for and redeemed, right? You have nothing about you that He doesn't know. You have nothing about you that you can hide or that you need to hide from Him. He knows it all, and He loves you anyway, desperately and deeply. And permanently. You are on solid footing with God. And when that sinks down into our bones, when that changes how we think and how we feel and what we choose, and how we relate to the people around us, it allows us to quit having these walls of defensiveness that we put up against people. We don't feel like we have to lash out in defense of ourselves so much against these, you know, these little personal petty attacks. We know who we are. That person does. You don't know me. We know who you are. And you can lose this pretense of building this fiction of yourself. Of painting this picture of yourself that you want the world to see. And our society is really good at that through social media. In social media, you can, you know, so many people get on social media and they paint this, whatever the image of themselves that they want people to consume is what you can craft, right? You can put out there just the information that you want people to see. Whether it's, I have the perfect life and the perfect home and I got all these places and, you know, look at my abs. Or, man, I'm so pitiful, you know, I'm so outraged at everything, and it's just, this world is terrible, and I'm so much better than all these idiots in this world around me, right? Or, I'm just a complete and utter victim. Everything around me is this total chaos, and I'm just this utter victim, please feel sorry for me, right? And you can also put aside this religious, you know, that, you know, it's kind of our, you know, our world can have this way where we can build this image of ourselves for people to consume. So you can leave that alone. You don't have to do that. God knows who you are, where you stand in God. You know where you stand in God. You are His child. You don't have to build up this picture of yourself for people to consume. And you can lose this pretense of religion. You can lose this pretense of having earned anything from God. You can lose this pretense of being good enough. You can lose this pretense of this little religious guy who's going to go to heaven when he dies and everyone else is going to hell because you're so good, right? You can forget that. And then with this, you know, for knowing where you stand with God and just abandoning abandoning the inclination to defend yourself and wall yourself up and wall yourself off from everyone else, and abandon the notion of building this fiction, of building this picture, painting this picture of who you are for other people to consume. Once you abandon all that stuff up, you can really then open up yourself and your relationships to be redeemed and changed by God. You can finally be honest with the people you come into contact with. You see what I'm saying? And so what does it look like? When we actually are able to bring our social context to the altar, all right? When we're finally able to invite God to redeem and form the way we interact with people, what does it look like? You know, this other passage we've read so many times, and actually a lot here lately too. It's kind of this how-to. I'll just read this because, I don't know, this context, I suppose. And also, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all He has done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind He will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship Him. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world. Don't do things the way this world does it. But let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. Because of this privilege and authority God has given me, I give each of you this warning. Don't think you're better than you really are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourselves, measuring yourselves by the faith God has given us. Just as our bodies have many parts and each part has a special function, so it is with Christ's body. We are many parts of one body and we all belong to each other. In His grace, God has given us different gifts for doing certain things well. So if God has given you the ability to prophesy, speak out with as much faith as God has given you. If your gift is serving others, serve them well. If you are a teacher, teach well. If your gift is to encourage others, be encouraging. If it is giving, give generously. If God has given you leadership ability, take the responsibility seriously. If you have a gift for showing kindness to others, do it gladly. So the context here is, be what God made you to be. Let God change you into what He wants you to be. And it's good. It's the best possible way to live. God's will for you, God's desire for your life is good and pleasing and perfect. It doesn't mean God wants you to be rich, right? It just means that it's good. Good in terms of beauty, not good in terms of, you know, everything working out to your little desires all the time. And he's, you know, we're all parts of one body. We need this social context. We need each other. We can't follow Jesus alone. We can't do this alone. We absolutely have to have each other. I need for you to be spiritually formed into the image of God. I need you. Because I can't be without you. Right? We're many parts of one body and we belong to each other. And while I have different giftedness and different roles, we're all not just robots. We're not all going to look the same or be the same or act the same. But I need you to figure out what God has made you good at. I need you to do that. We all do, right? And then don't just pretend to love others. Really love them. Hate what is wrong. Hold tightly to what is good. Love each other with genuine affection. And take delight in honoring each other. Outdo one another in showing honor. Let's make a list. I don't think about honoring each other. Okay? And I don't have a preformed list. This isn't one of those where I'm trying to, like, get you to put stuff here and then I'm going to say, you're wrong, you're stupid, look how smart I am. That's not one of these. I'll do that later. I'm just kidding. How do you honor somebody? How have you felt honored before? Let's start there. How have you felt honored before? Has anyone felt honored by another person before? How? Okay. Well, she said, how would you say that? when you yeah, when you think, when you let them, when you let someone know you think well of them, right?
John, I've got somebody,
mm-hmm,
a friend of mine, take me to
high tea
and pay for everything just to show me how much.
Yeah, that's awesome. So they took you to where? Oh, to high. Okay, to tea.
High tea.
I've never been there. When you, and when you gave them this gift of, how would you say that? I mean, that's this gift of time. When you, you know, let's say put tea, high tea. Someone took Lisa to high tea and paid for it all just to show them that that person thought a lot of, you know, her and valued her and cared for her. Okay. How else? How else have you been honored? Huh? Yeah, be supported. In what way?
Moral support.
Uh-huh. Like encouragement? Yeah. What other kind of support have you been supported and you felt honored?
People offer to help you do something.
Yeah. Help. What else?
Pray for.
Yeah. Okay. What else has made you feel honored before in your life? That's it? Nobody? What does honor mean? I should have looked that up. What's honor mean? Alan, what's honor mean? Well, somebody, don't have to be Alan. What does it mean to honor?
I guess I can think of respect.
Yeah. Yeah, so I say respect. Yeah, hold in high esteem.
Ask your opinion about something.
There you go. Yeah, that's a way to honor someone. Ask if you're, someone has asked your opinion. That is, that's a really good point. That's very, very true. Right? That's very, very true. I can remember when some, you know, some of the people first started asking me my opinion on something in the Bible. I'm like, really? Yeah, I'll talk about that. What are the ways that you felt honored? Yes. Yeah. Listen. Okay. All right. So now, so how do we go about outdoing our, trying to outdo each other and honoring other people? What sorts of things could you do to honor your brothers and sisters? Huh? Take them to high tea, yeah. Absolutely.
Huh? When somebody puts something in writing, everyone
wants a lot. Yeah. Maybe write them a note. Like in handwritten note, right?
Pray for them.
Yeah, pray for them. Yeah. What else? How could you support your brothers and sisters? Or a brother or a sister. Huh? Yeah. Support financially, absolutely. All sorts of ways. Let's say you wanted to pick somebody out. Okay, let's say you took this, you said you took the Bible literally. You were one of those people. And you decided that you want to try to honor someone. You wanted to try to outdo Travis in showing honor. And so you picked out a person. You know, you say, I want to honor that person this week. What would you do? It depends on the person, right? Yeah. And whose benefit would you be seeking with this honor? That person, right? That person might not need any financial help at all, or they might. You know, it, you know, it's... See, that's the whole thing with this. It's not like this... program or process. It's interpersonal relationships. Right? It requires you to take this seriously and take that person seriously and search a way that would honor that person and let them know that they are valued and they and what you think of them, right? So it's literally what it's telling us to do. Okay? It's literally what it looks like. That is a big aspect of what it looks like for a person to be in the image of God. So it looks like for a person to be a living sacrifice. Be a living sacrifice. Outdo each other in showing honor. It should be this contest. I love that language. Outdo each other in showing honor. To take delight in showing. It's something that and you do like to do that. It's not this big chore, is it? Is it? When you do something like this, it's not like this, I gotta go honor Chad. Yeah, it's not. It's not this heavy, burdensome way. This is cool stuff. It's fun. It's life-giving. And it's saying this should be this within your communities, within your church communities, within your church families, within your neighborhoods and your community. This should be this ongoing, pervasive thing. It should be something that everyone is involved in all the time. And it's like if you're looking at it from the outside, it looks like this contest to see who can honor the other person the most. Right? Does that seem like a good group of people to be a part of or not? Yes. That's the sort of a group that we are called to be. Right? Never be lazy. Work hard and serve the Lord enthusiastically. Rejoice in your confident hope. Be patient in trouble and keep on praying. And when God's people are in need, be ready to help them. Always be eager to practice hospitality. Always be eager. Seek out. Be ready. Be willing. Be looking. Be eager to practice hospitality. That plays in quite a bit with honor, doesn't it? It's kind of interrelated there. What is hospitality? I should have looked up the definition for that too. What's hospitality? Huh? What's hospitality? We need to talk about this a little bit so we know we're all on the same page. What's hospitality? I don't have a definition. You have to give me one. As welcoming someone, yeah. Usually into your home, right? It's welcoming. And looking to serve that person and being open to interaction with that person, right? Any other, that seemed pretty good? Be welcoming and open interaction with other people and serving them. Always be eager to practice hospitality. I want to read this in 1 Timothy 3. This is a trustworthy saying. If someone aspires to be a church leader, if someone aspires to be an overseer or a bishop or whatever, this is like, you know, like one of the top dogs in the church hierarchy, right? He desires an honorable position. So a church leader must be a man whose life is above reproach. He must be faithful to his wife. He must exercise self-control. He must live wisely and have a good reputation. He must enjoy having guests in his home. Or literally, must be hospitable. All right. He must be able to teach. He must not be a heavy drinker, be violent. He must be gentle, not quarrelsome, and not love money. He must manage his own family well, having children who respect and obey him. For if a man cannot manage his own household, how can he take care of God's church? Right in the middle of this list, I mean, like, wow, and all this stuff, yeah, of course. He has to be hospitable. To be an overseer, a bishop, to be a leader in the church, one of the requirements. Don't be drunk. Don't beat your wife. Well, you know. And enjoy having guests in your home. I mean, how many scandals have you heard of church leaders, you know, being run out in shame for not being hospitable? For not being welcoming and open to people? Right, there it is. This is something that God takes very seriously. Always be eager to practice hospitality. It's not just a suggestion. This is what is going to happen when our lives are shaped like Jesus. You can't really call yourself Christ-like if you're not hospitable and welcoming to other people, are you? Because that is one of the defining characteristics of Jesus' life on this earth. He loved to be around other people. He loved to eat with other people. He was always going to someone's house. He was always having, you know, sitting around and talking to people. It's just one of the, you know, one of the top one or two or three of the defining characteristics of his ministry. He was with other people. Right? It's a big deal. And this, and being around other people, this is how our interpersonal relationships are formed and how they're changed. Right? When you're actually, when you open up your house to somebody, or you go meet somewhere in a park, and you're at a restaurant or whatever, and you're sitting down talking to that person, it's really hard to like actively attack and hate that person, isn't it? Yeah. It's like really hard when you're sitting down and you open yourself up, you know, through the power of the Spirit to be open to this person, and you ask this person their opinions, and you know ask them questions, ask how their life is, and you know just get to know that person. It's really, really hard to push them away and to completely disregard whether they live or die, isn't it? Yeah. It's kind of hard to completely dismiss the existence of another person when you open yourself up and you sit across the table from them and you get to know that person. And it's really hard to actively hate that person. It's really hard to judge, you know, this other person and their lifestyle choice or whatever it is about them that you would otherwise separate yourself from and hate. It's really hard to hate that person actively when you get to know them, isn't it? Generally. You know, some people, the kind of the opposite happens, but that's a different story, I guess. And we're not talking about entertainment. Like, you know, when you clean your house from top to bottom and you sweep out from under the refrigerator and you cook for 2 days ahead of time, making the most elaborate meal you possibly can, and you put out candles and your grandmother's china and you have that person over, that's not hospitality. That's entertainment. Okay, which is fine. You know, if you want to do that, that's fine. That's good. That's not hospitality. That's not opening yourself up, opening your life up, opening your home up, perhaps, to another person. To get to know that other person and to honor them. Right? And again, always be eager. The implication here is this is something that is just pervasive in this community that he's talking about. Something that's just pervasive. Just everyone is doing this all the time. Right? So again, you get this sense. These people are just going to consumed with honoring each other. And they're always visiting. They're always sitting down with other people. Always getting to know them. Always serving them. And always eager. Again, does this seem like a good group to be a part of? Excellent. Right? Seems like an incredibly good group to be a part of. And that brings up the other thing about hospitality. That is also the center of how this gospel spread. Right? I don't think it was ever really meant to be this institutionalized thing where you bring everyone here to hear some guy on Sunday mornings so you can sign up for this, you know, you can, you know, like baking the cookies, here's this recipe, what you need to do to get signed up to this club. When instead people got to know each other, usually around a table, and you had people who were consumed with the love of Christ and who wanted to see other people consumed by that same love, who were rescued and redeemed by this resurrection of Jesus and wanted other people to be rescued and redeemed, right? And this spread, not through the cathedrals, it spread through the households. That's another incredibly important part of opening yourselves up to other people. It's also how other people come to know Christ. But, you know, in our social context, again, it's so backwards that, you know, for a lot of us, what we do, we go to work, and then we drive straight home, and as soon as we get, or maybe we stop and grab a bag of, you know, whatever, a hot bag of garbage to eat for supper. And you pull in, and you walk straight into the house, and you know, maybe you sit down at a table. It's probably pretty rare overall. But you sit down at a table, or maybe, if you're lucky, you sit down at a table with your family. If not, everyone takes, you know, a seat in the living room, and you look at, you know, a box while you eat supper, right? And then you just, you know, maybe flip through Facebook or consume whatever media you want to consume until it's time to go to sleep, then you go to sleep. You know, in the mix of that, you may throw in your household chores or whatever you need to do, mow the grass or whatever. But that's kind of what you do. That's kind of your cycle all week long, right? Every week after week. And so what contact do you really have with other people that isn't virtual? Really, even the people in your own household, what real contact do you have with them? Yeah. That's this open and honest, honoring, hospitable contact. Oh, you see? See how I say we're all wounded? Right? So let's take this seriously. Let's make honoring each other pervasive. Let's make it a contest. I dare you to try to honor someone more than me. And let's change whatever we need to change about our lives so that we can practice hospitality. Whatever it is that's in the way. Whether it's our hang-ups about how dirty our house is. Here's a pro tip. No one cares. We really don't. Okay? Whether it's your hang-ups about how dirty your house is, or maybe it's your complete lack of housekeeping and you should maybe, you know, pick up the dog poop out of the floor occasionally or something. Or whether it's your busyness, your total involvement, you're being consumed by too many things, and some of those things you need to say no to. Maybe it's just fear over being rejected, you know. But who likes to get an invitation to dinner? Raise your hand, please. Yeah. And maybe you don't have a house, you know, of your own, that's fine. You know, meet somebody out at the park and cook a hamburger, or take a pizza to the park, you know, or go to a restaurant. You eat, well, I'll say 21 times a week on the low end, but take a couple of those and do them with somebody else. Steer and ask that person's opinion on something. Talk about Jesus. All right? It is so good to be a part of this group here. It really is. How much better would it be if we made it a contest to honor people? And if one of the defining things about us is that we were eager to practice hospitality. You think that would be cool or not? Cool or uncool? Me too. Apparently God does too. And see, that's the thing about this. Look at this other command. Rejoice in our confident hope. What's a synonym for rejoice? Celebrate. What if another defining characteristic about us was that we were celebratory? you know anyone who is a naturally, or seemingly a naturally celebratory person? I think it's Troy. We've already mentioned him, but I mean, Troy's like, oh man, that's awesome. I'm fired up. That's insane. You know, it probably gets old after a while, Tammy. I don't know, but he really is this celebratory person. Whatever it is, you know, your boy catches a big fish, he's like, yeah. You know, whatever it is. You know, you have a hamburger, yeah. All right. Would it be good or would it be bad if more of us were like, we're celebratory? Think about how good God is and how good of a life we are invited to. If one of the commands is to celebrate. Do you know what I mean? This is the best possible way to live. This is how we get over this woundedness. This is how we get past the junk in our past. Right? We get over, you know, we've all been hurt, we've all been screwed over, we've all been wounded. Yeah, we get that. We've all also been loved by the Creator of this universe more than we could possibly imagine. We've all wounded other people, and we've all been completely and utterly 100% forgiven. This life can be a mess. This world is screwed up. This life can be painful, and stupid, horrible things happen. But this world is headed to a new age. It is going to be made new. The resurrection of Jesus is going to pervade this world just like death does now. We can celebrate that confident hope. We know God is going to work this out. I love that. I've left this in here, final exhortations in Philippians, in the heading of this. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say it again. Rejoice. Celebrate. We're invited to be part of a community. And we're invited to make, to shape our community into a community of people who make it a contest to honor each other. Who are intentional about showing hospitality and opening ourselves up to each other. You know, we're just defined by celebration. So let's do that. Sounds like an incredibly good thing to be a part of.